day and those ahead, we call upon you to reveal to those gathered the common goals they seek, while ever reminding them of the commitment that brought them to this place so that they might be able to serve the people of Minnesota. Bless them with the extraordinary gift of discernment as they seek to truly hear one another, and may they be guided in such a way as to pave the way so that your justice may be done. It is with a profound sense of gratitude for the many blessings you have bestowed upon each person gathered here that we offer you this day. Amen.
I would face the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Good work. Yep.
Secretary, we'll take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzel, Bonoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubley, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Perso, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Wieger.
Quorum is present. First start our business is executive and official communications. There's one printed on today's agenda. Next order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file herewith returned, Senate file 2428, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. And Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted, House file 2553 and 3055, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Okay, the next order of business is first reading of House bills. Printed on today's agenda, without objection, they'll be referred to the committees as indicated. First reading. Next order of business is reports of committees. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that their committee reports printed in today's agenda be adopted.
On the Senator Pogemiller's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business is second reading of Senate bills. There are two printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. Next order of business is, motions and resolutions. Generally, they're authors' motions. Without objection, we will take them as one motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Dibble, did you have a motion to make?
Yes, Mr. President, I move that Senate file number 3028 be withdrawn from the Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection and be re-referred to the Committee on Business, Industry, and Jobs.
Okay, you've talked to
Thank you, Senator. Mr. President. Yes, I've spoken with the Committee on Commerce and with yourself, Mr. President, and everyone agrees
okay,
that this is appropriate.
On the Dibble motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Scheid, did you have a...
Thank you, Mr. President. Excuse me. I move that Senate file 2575, which is number 4 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Senator Bach and I have discussed this. It's a bill I have that's out here on the floor that may have tax implications regarding limited liability company privileges for nonprofits.
Okay. On the Scheid motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. We have a motion to be read at the desk.
Senator Vickerman moves that the name of Senator Scogan be added as a co-author to Senate file number 3344.
Do we need him? So Vickerman. As Ed Scogan is co-author to Senate file 3344. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Next order of business, without objection, there's one bill on the consent calendar. Remaining on motions, the only bill on the consent calendar today will be Senator Higgins's bill, Senate file 2861. Senator Higgins, did you wish to explain your bill?
Thank you, Mr. President and members. This bill changes the due date of a report that comes to the legislature from the Gang and Drug Oversight Council. Current law would have the council receive information up to the last day of the month, and then the report is due the next day. That's a little hard for almost anybody to do. So this just moves back the date of the report from the 1st of February to the 15th of February. I'd ask for your support.
Any further discussion on Senate file 2861? Seeing none, that's...
Mr. President, I misspoke. The 15th of March, not the 15th of February.
Further discussion on the bill. Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate file 2861 its third reading.
Senate file 2861, a bill for an act relating to public safety, changing the due date of the Gang and Drug Oversight Council's annual report to the legislature.
Secretary will take the roll on the bill. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 55 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Pogemiller, remaining under motions.
Remaining on motions, why don't we take introductions and first readings before we go back to general orders?
That's fine. Next order of business will be introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. There are three changes on page 2. Senate file 3441 will be sent to the Energies, Utilities, and Technology Communications Committee. And on page 3, Senate file 3353 to the State and Local Government Operations Committee. And on page 8, Senate file 3396 will be sent to the Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee. Without objection, first reading, introductions of the Senate bills. First reading. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for the purpose of taking up the general orders calendar. And I would propose that we take up a set. There's a sheet on your desk of 7 bills, it looks like, that are related to mortgage foreclosure. There's a list on your desk. So I would
okay. On the motion to resolve into the Committee of the Whole, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
I would yield, Mr. President, I'd yield to Senator Scheid for Senate file 2912.
General orders today will be Senate file 2912. Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Chairman, we're in general orders, right? Senate file 2912 is the product of one of the working groups that met, and I move when this committee do arise that Senate file 2912 be recommended to pass.
Senator Scheid on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate file 2912 comes among some other with some other bills that are a result of some groups of legislators, bipartisan Republicans, Democrats, House members, and Senate members, as well as a wide spectrum of representatives in the private sector. We had organizations such as ACORN, the Manufactured Housing Association, realtors, bankers, attorneys who have worked on both sides of the issue of foreclosure. We all talk a lot. We know that Minnesota places a high value on home ownership. In fact, we often say it's the single largest investment that any one of us makes in a lifetime, and that's true. But we've had a record number of foreclosures in this last year. Hennepin County in January had the largest number of foreclosures ever. It was up over 60%, I think, of more than what it was a year ago at this time. It's affecting individuals. It's affecting neighborhoods. If you can imagine a street of, say, 16, 18 homes, 12, 13 of them are in foreclosure. Some are boarded up. Some are already torn down because of damage that was done to them because they were vacant properties. You can imagine if you're one of the four or five remaining homes on that block. That's happening in some of our neighborhoods, particularly in the inner city. But it's also affecting whole communities, not just in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and not just in the district that I represent, which abuts North Minneapolis, which is one of the hardest hit areas, if not, it's the hardest hit area in our state. But it's also happening across the state of Minnesota. And it's happening to some folks in expensive properties, as well as people who are in what you might call first-time homes. So during the interim, a number of working groups met to try to alleviate some of the burdens of those homeowners who are facing foreclosure. Last year, we passed strict and tough anti-predatory lending legislation. But for those people already in foreclosure or about to be, we did not enact any measures. It isn't easy to act retroactively on a legal contract, which is what mortgages are. Borrowers still have to follow our foreclosure process, and Minnesota has a liberal foreclosure process, giving people a six-month redemption period after the sheriff's sale, for example. You can imagine that not very many people are able to redeem. So we have chosen in this bill to try to engage people in trying to avoid foreclosure early in the process. And let me briefly describe our foreclosure process here. Begins with a notice of default, and it ends with the expiration of that redemption period. In that time, the homeowner may avoid the foreclosure and loss of the home, but in most cases, what happens is that they end up going through the foreclosure. It can start as early as 30 days after they miss a payment. You might be surprised to hear that. I think I was. Once they're delinquent, 30 days in default, once they're delinquent, the lender empowers an attorney who can begin the foreclosure process by assigning a power of attorney. Typically, after 90 days or, that's three missed payments, lenders start aggressive actions to recoup the past due payments. And by the way, during this time, before the sheriff's sale, a homeowner has the opportunity to reinstate themselves by picking up everything that all the missed payments and any of the costs associated with the beginning of the process, starting with the default notice. And that's probably the time you want people to be able to do it. If they can make up one or two house payments, they might be able to find a source of funding for that. Whereas coming up with the whole $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 to redeem at the end of the redemption period is obviously almost an impossibility for any people facing foreclosure. So the bank starts the process by one of two ways in Minnesota. The most common way, about 95% or more of all of our foreclosures, are by advertisement. And all of you have seen those notices in Legal Ledger, for example. That's called foreclosure by advertisement. The other way is when they go through court, that would be called judicial foreclosure. We're not really dealing with that in this bill. After a certain time period, the property is sold at a sheriff's sale by the local, by your county sheriff. That's called the sheriff's sale. Until that sale, remember, they have the right to reinstate. After the sale, they have to redeem. Reinstate is the smaller amount, the smaller figure, the missed payments and costs associated up to that point. Redemption means a total new refinancing, paying off the whole entire mortgage or mortgages and any other liens, as well as all the costs. And the costs are numerous when you go all the way through that process. So after that sheriff's sale, then is when the homeowner can then redeem as well. They have the right to stay in the property, even if it's sold as a sheriff's sale. And this is where I'm talking about Minnesota's rather liberal foreclosure process. And in fact, if they have a lot of equity in the home, they may get a 12-month redemption period. But that's not what we're talking about in these cases that we're seeing here. These aren't, generally speaking, people with much equity, if any. Some of them may have negative amortization on loans, which now no longer allow because of what we did last year with predatory lending. But the people we're trying to help now are definitely in that situation. So if they abandon the property, then the foreclosure can happen in about five weeks. That may or may not happen. If there are tenants living in the property, if it's an investment property or a home that someone couldn't sell and they decided to rent and now they're losing it, the renter will also have certain rights, and Senator Higgins has some language dealing with that. I want to describe the fundamentals of this bill. A lot of it is technical language. I wanted to explain the foreclosure process the best I could. At some point, at the end of that six-month redemption period, the person will be, they will be forced to leave their home. Section 7 of this bill is a very significant portion, and it's really just common sense. When a lender begins that foreclosure action, they send a notice of default, that tells the borrower that they could, and this is going to be in a form that's of a different color. So they always get that default notice. But accompanying it now, when we pass this, will be an announcement that they may receive foreclosure prevention counseling. Get those services from an authorized foreclosure prevention agency. Such an agency would be one that's approved by MHFA, the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, or HUD. If we can engage people as soon as possible, we might be more successful in helping them to avoid and avert foreclosure. And that surely is our goal. Someone told me that about half of the people about to go in foreclosure don't open the letters from their lender, and they don't take their phone calls. So they are truly in denial. we understand that. We hope that by having this different colored notice, that it will draw to their attention that they may receive help. And the language of this notice is found then in Section 7 of the bill, which begins on page 4. And it's very prescriptive language telling people you may do this. In fact, we've notified one of these agencies about your situation, and they're going to be contacting you. We're hoping that more people are going to act sooner to find out that they may have options. And they may be able to negotiate something with their lender. Perhaps not, but the earlier they find out what options are available, perhaps they realize they need to sell so they don't lose what little equity, if any, they have in the home, and they don't end up going through foreclosure and harming, obviously doing severe harm to their credit. So the option may be best for them to sell. And brokers are often asked by lenders to intervene and to help people through this process as well, and they may still do that. But we want people to act sooner rather than later. Makes sense. There's also language in this bill that requires notice to the tenants, and that language is prescriptive as well, Section 11. We've tried to lower costs in this bill by reducing the number of required publications. We're fixing the rate of the interest rate on what is probably an adjustable rate mortgage. We're fixing that at the time of the sheriff's sale so it doesn't then escalate during that remaining 6 months of redemption period. That I want to comment that lenders have been in support of this bill, and I think this is probably their least favorite piece of the bill, but I think it probably in the long run may actually help some people save their property. And I think banks really don't want to be in the real estate business. They don't want to own the properties. That isn't what they're set up to do. They really want people to be able to stay. So I think that this is one small way of helping people perhaps to be able to redeem. Then it limits what that can be listed on the affidavit of allowable costs. These are the costs that pile up during the course of this time frame. And there is a penalty in there for excessive costs. That would be new language, Section 21. And finally, it allows the holder of the sheriff's certificate of sale to take actions to keep the premises of a foreclosed property from falling below the minimum community standards for public safety and sanitation and make reasonable periodic inspections. It also encourages that 5-week foreclosure process. If the property is vacant, we make it easier to do that. I believe that that sums up the basics of what the bill does. I certainly would entertain any questions that that members might have. Thank you.
Discussion on Senate File 2912. The chair recognizes Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would the senator yield for a couple questions, for clarity, maybe?
Senator Scheid will yield.
Thank you. Just a couple questions with regards to the, which caught my eye on this bill, with regards to the sheriff's sale. It appears to be that there may be a significant change here for the staffing issues of the sheriffs. With diving into and getting themselves in between, and I'm sure this discussion went on in committee, and maybe you could just clarify it for me a little bit, that there were discussions with regards to getting between the lender and the sheriff, and the costs were discussed. Was there any discussion with what it was going to cost the local units of government via the sheriff? I mean, the sheriff's been doing foreclosure sales for many years. I was involved in many of them myself. Were those costs at all talked about, and it's not clear to me, is it possible that the county sheriff will be able to recover some of those costs included in this bill?
Members, will you hold your conversations down? We have a discussion going on the floor between two senators about this bill, and it's difficult to hear. Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking for my list that I have of those allowable costs. We did have discussions. Senator Ortman engaged us in a rather lively discussion in the Judiciary Committee. By the way, this bill was in the Judiciary Committee as well as the Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee. We did talk about that. I need to look here quickly in the language of the bill to see about those allowable costs. One of the things I would say generally supporting what we're doing by giving the sheriff the authority, requiring the sheriff actually to get the final information, the payoff information, et cetera, from the lender. One of the problems is the inability to get that information, and we feel we need the authority of the sheriff's office to do that. I'm looking for the allowable costs. Well, we have cost of the sheriff on page 16, line 27, fees or to the county recorder, registrar of titles, or sheriff to obtain or record the certificates of sale or redemption or notices of attention, etc. I think that covers the concern you have, Senator Ingebrigtsen, because they are listed as being able to recover those costs.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that explanation. So to understand it clearly, then, they are going to be able to receive some of those additional costs. I know that was certainly a concern of theirs, and sometimes these things become very labor-intensive for the counties, and the scare is always there about the unfunded mandate that we send on down, and thank you so much for clarifying that.
Chair recognizes Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Scheid yield for a question?
She will yield.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Scheid, if I could direct your attention to page 15 of the bill. This is in regards to the same area of questioning that Senator Ingebrigtsen had regarding the sheriff's involvement on a mortgage sale. But I found a kind of a curious line in the bill on page 15, lines 34 and 35. There's a reference that in the event there is a postponement, the words say the postponement does not need to be published. And I'm wondering, why are we changing our direction on publishing to non-publishing now? Could you maybe explain that to me, why we need to do that?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Senator Limmer, it's not that there won't be any publication. We reduced the number of publications from 6 to 3, I believe, in the bill. There must be publication, but this relates to the postponement of the sale, because there could be numerous postponements. We don't want to incur that cost of that publication. So the people who, it's my understanding from people who work in this foreclosure process on behalf of lenders and on behalf of foreclosed persons, that the people who are there are the people who know it's been postponed, and they know they would learn at that time when the next sale would be. It may be in a week.
Mr. President.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. President, before we continue this discussion, could you get the room a little more in order, please? It's very difficult.
Members and staff, would you take your conversations outside the chamber? We have members finding it difficult to hear the explanation of the provisions of the bill. Please. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Scheid, if I heard you correctly, what you're trying to do is change the balance a little bit, reduce the cost of the publications of whether or not these sales dates change, and that in this case a postponement as referred to on page 15, lines 34 and 35, that was a means to save money. Is that is that how I heard you correctly? That the postponement need not to be published? And I'm, you know, the other side of that balance point is, of course, is to make sure that the public is aware that the actual sale is changing date, and that if there is an interested party that wants to avail themselves of that sale, how would they know if that postponement date has not been published? There is certainly a balance that we're trying to achieve here, and I'm just trying to understand why we've removed the public notice of that postponed sale.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Senator Limmer, because the people who know who are interested in the purchase are probably there at the sale. They are probably present when that happens. It's generally investors. It may be a creditor, but generally investors, and we're trying to reduce the costs to the homeowner of all these publications.
I guess we're in Mr. Chair at this time. Mr. Chair, I have a A11 amendment that I'd like to introduce.
The Secretary will report the A11 amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend Senate File 2912 as follows. Page 10, delete Section 13. This is Amendment A11.
Senator Limmer has moved the adoption of the A11 amendment. Discussion on the amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid, the A11 amendment makes reference to that line that I brought your attention to on page 15, the postponement need not be published. What I'd like to do is make sure that it is published. And the reason is that you may know that there may be a small amount of investors perhaps interested in buying that property. We certainly know that the bank, and we know that the owner of the property certainly is aware of that. But keep in mind, if we keep that potential sale limited to a very small group of people, the chances of gaining a sizable dollar amount back in a competitive bidding process works for the benefit of all of those concerned, that we can have more people involved. And if more people know of this sale, they in turn can participate rather than keeping that sale to a very slim few margin of people that might be interested. I believe that the references to postpone and also the other sections that fit into this type of announcement need to be restored in the bill, and that the sale of this property should be kept public.
The chair recognizes Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Limmer, there is notice of the sheriff's sale. It's published at least 6 weeks in advance of the sale. The people who will be coming to that sale, there will be an announcement by the sheriff at the sale that it's postponed. I don't think you're going to expand the list of people who are going to be coming in the future by requiring the notice of the postponement.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid, I don't know if we would know that. I don't know if we would know that we're going to limit it to that earlier amount of people or not. I've certainly gone to a number of auctions, not so much foreclosure auctions, but I certainly have gone to my share of auctions before. And if an auction was postponed, usually it's made known, especially in estate sales, that if there's any type of postponement, the auctioneer and all of those interested in that sale want to make sure there's a wide group of people coming. It helps the prospect of the sale. It usually ends up improving the bottom line of that sale. So I just think it would be harmful if we did not publish the postponement of any sale. I think the public certainly has a right to know, and why should we keep it to a select small group of potential buyers? If there's other people that are interested in that, why don't we make it wide open for everyone to know about it, and that way there may even be an improved dollar amount that comes out of that sale. I don't understand why we would postpone it.
The chair recognizes Senator Betzold.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This issue was discussed in the Senate Judiciary Committee, and the information we had, first of all, if you have notice of the sale, that should be sufficient in many cases. If you weren't even interested in the sale, why would you be interested in a postponed date? The people who have an interest in the sale would be aware of if it's postponed. It could be postponed for any number of reasons, including weather, by the way. And the trouble is, as it was explained to us, was the fact that some of the communities only have weekly publications. So if you have to postpone it and you're required to give notice of the postponement, you may have to go out a couple of weeks, which is going to be in anybody's interest to do that. So I think that leaving language in exactly follows the intent of what we need to do here. Again, if you weren't even interested for the original sale, why would you be interested in the postponement? So I think we should leave the language in and not support the amendment.
Further discussion on the A11 amendment. Hearing no further discussion, Senator Limiter has moved to adopt the A11 amendment. We'll proceed to vote on that. All those in favor of adopting the amendment indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The nays prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 2912. Chair recognizes Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will Senator Scheid yield for a question?
Senator Scheid will yield.
Senator Scheid, I recall when discussing the notice of counseling or the notice that the foreclosure information is being sent to a counselor that the property owner had, that if the property owner didn't tell the mortgage company that they didn't want the notice of counseling sent to the counselor, it would automatically be sent, but that there, it was my understanding there would be some opt-out for them. And I'm looking through the bill and I can't find that. Do you know where it's at in here?
Chair recognizes Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Senator Vandeveer, that language was removed in the Judiciary Committee because lenders told us they didn't need to have the opt-out. So there is no more opting out. That took up more time in the process, and if we don't need to do it, if they're free to get this advice to the homeowner sooner, there's more of a chance that people will be able to reinstate or redeem or work out some other satisfactory conclusion rather than foreclosure.
Senator Vandeveer.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid, so now the property owner's personal information will be sent to the counselor and they have no opportunity to say whether that's okay or not. It'll just automatically be sent out. Is that correct?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. That doesn't mean that they will have to avail themselves of that help. But what we want to do is ensure that the people that are talking or working with them will be people that have been approved either by HUD at the federal level or the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency at the state level. We don't want equity strippers and other kinds of people. We don't want them contacting people. They certainly may and probably are. But we want to avoid that. We want to alert homeowners that there are approved agencies to do this. And that's why that language is as it is.
Senator Vandeveer.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid, I think, though, that it's possible that some people would not want this private information just sent out, and it does seem a little more intrusive than we had discussed, so I would prefer that had been in there, but thank you.
Is there a further discussion on Senate File 2912? Chair recognizes Senator Limiter.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Scheid, you and I had a brief discussion earlier before the session began, exactly over the very same issue that Senator Vandeveer brought up, and that's a question of whether or not we're altering the way we handle information on private transactions. As you know, a mortgage is an agreement between two parties. One is the mortgagor, the one who holds the money, who allows the money to be used for a home purchase. And the mortgagee is the one that makes the payment. And in exchange for making payment, they enjoy the use of a property. In the event that there's a problem with that mortgagee making that payment, We now are changing the way we do business in the state of Minnesota. We've now decided that we're going to take that intimate financial information and then just give it off to a counseling service. Now, in and of itself, that's probably a good thing, to make sure that the mortgagee is aware that there's people, services out there that can help them in a counseling basis. But the question comes up is this. Are we, the government, going to take their information without their permission and just hand it off, when maybe we could maybe honor the right of a citizen a little bit and say, hey, there's some companies, services that are available for you. We'd like to make that available to you, and you make the decision. The citizen makes the decision, rather than us, government, telling them we're simply, without your permission, going to give all of that information over. Their name, their address, what their mortgage is, what their mortgage payment is. Are they in arrears? Usually if they're going to get a statement, everyone will know that they're in arrears on their payment. And I'm concerned about why we as a government are going to participate in it that way.
Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Limmer. I want to draw your attention to page 4, line 21. And it's just that the lender is going to transmit the homeowner's name, address, and telephone number. There's not going to be all of the other information that you're concerned about. And in any case, at the end of all of this, if we get to sheriff sale, you know there's publication of the sheriff sale, then it becomes truly public. This is going to approved counseling agencies' name, address, and phone number, so it won't be giving up that personal information. But if you look at the language on all this notice that comes to homeowners, to borrowers, it's quite specific. And I think it's clear that we're trying to convince them to try to get help as soon as possible so that they can avoid the foreclosure process. Thank you.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Scheid, is this a proactive writing for this bill, meaning any mortgage that's written today and in the future will be handled this way? Or is it kind of in a retroactive way that perhaps any mortgage that's been written in the past but has a problem today will automatically be treated in this fashion?
Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Limmer, this is prospective. So it's in the sense there may be people about to go into foreclosure and it's going to apply to them. But yes, in 2 years this would apply, and we can hope and pray that we're not in the same situation at that point that we are today with these record numbers of foreclosure. But we're trying to help people and prevent the equity stripping. We've had legislation, I think, a couple years ago concerning that. We know that's happening. We want to give people good advice, sound advice. Every time we do something like this, we have to balance interests. And we fell, if you would, or we waited on the side of trying to help that homeowner get the help they need as soon as they can.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Scheid, I have to disagree with you. I don't believe this is about equity stripping. This is about borrowers' consent of whether we take their most intimate knowledge, triggering a labeling on them of whether or not they're in foreclosure or not, without their permission. Now, if you want to get into the equity stripping debate, that would be a point after a sheriff sale, after the opportunity where the public at large can purchase a property from a sheriff sale. And one can certainly ask the question if that's equity stripping or not, but really it's a foreclosure sale. This doesn't have much to do with equity stripping, I don't believe. This is about the reason I'm asking this question is about consumer consent. Can this information be passed on without the consumer's permission? And in this law, or this bill, if it becomes law, you're saying, yes, we want to do that. And I'm raising the question, I don't know if that's in the best interest of consumers, let alone the best interest of our state. Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce the A-12 amendment regarding this particular issue.
Secretary, report the A-2 amendment, Senator Limmer.
A-12, Mr. Chair.
Read the A-12 amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend Senate File 2912 as follows, page 4, line 18. This is Amendment A-12.
Senator Limmer has moved the adoption of the A-12 amendment. On that amendment, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A-12 amendment focuses on the very discussion we're having right now. I believe that consumer consent should be something that's voluntarily given by the consumer. I think at the same time, when we're dealing with foreclosure sales, we should make every available notice to the consumer that there are counseling services available to them, and that we would be installing language that would include a list of contact information for authorized foreclosure counseling agencies to make sure that the consumer is aware of them. We simply don't go quite as far as the bill has before us, that we're going to take the name, address, telephone number, the contact information of that consumer and automatically rifle it over to these foreclosure counseling services without their permission. And any other references that we have certainly would be there. We'd change the premise that would say page 5, line 31, agencies that may contact you are agencies you may contact. We're putting the consumer back in charge of their own destiny, and that they have a right to go forward in their own proactive way to contact these agencies.
Chair recognizes Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Limmer. Now, I strongly oppose your amendment here. I understand what you're trying to do. The truth of the matter, again, is that only the name, address, and phone number are being given. Today, a lender has the ability to notify, for example, a real estate broker to get an opinion and to contact the person who's defaulted, who's late in their payments. They're already doing this. This is just speeding up the process and giving that homeowner notice of what the lenders can already do. And they don't have to say yes. Still be some people that will ignore even this piece of literature. But I think that we're concerned. You talked about homeowners being proactive in their own defense. Senator Limmer, that's not happening. People are in denial. Too many people. And are not reading anything or taking phone calls. We're hoping with this notice that's on different colored paper that's coming with the first notice of default. Once that when the notice of pendency is filed, I believe that all of this information is public in any case. So this is, if you will, leaning to the side of helping that person as soon as we can. We had an opt-out provision. We decided it ate up too much time, and people were going to get deeper into trouble. So I would urge you to not support Senator Limmer's amendment. Thank you.
Members, I'm going to recognize Senator Higgins next, but before I do, please take the conversations outside the chamber. Members are having a difficult time to hear, and this is a very good debate going on about an essential part of the bill. So members, please take your conversations out so members can participate in the debate. Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I agree thoroughly with Senator Scheid. Members, this pile of paper here, 22 a sheet, is all the foreclosures in Minneapolis last year. And what we know is that the folks who are going through this process, when they finally contact the prevention counselors, they're doing it many times too late to actually prevent their house from the total foreclosure. What Senator Scheid's bill would do is get them information, get them connected up with a counselor if they choose to do so when that counselor makes the first contact, much earlier in the process. We think that this is hugely important to try to prevent foreclosures. I ask you to vote no on this amendment.
Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Senator Berglund, I don't see how. I understand the nature of the urgency for, you know, getting people to go to counseling, but I don't see how not having an opt-out, even if it's just a few days for the property owner, is going to destroy that. And in the discussions we had in the group that I think crafted this legislation, this was part of it originally when the bill was first drafted. So I don't think what Senator Limerick is doing is going to harm the bill very much at all, if any.
Is there a further discussion on the 812 amendment? Senator Limerick.
Mr. President, we probably have had a pretty lively discussion on this. However, we're beginning to now take a small step to a point where government now will take an added step in how we transact real estate business. If between the two parties, the mortgagor and the mortgagee, if there is an attempt, or if there is a setting where it looks as though this property may be in foreclosure, government is now going to step in and tell people and share information about the names and addresses of that consumer who is in danger of losing their home, now sharing that information without the consumer's permission. There will be no consumer consent on this portion of the bill. We're asking that we recognize in the state of Minnesota that individuals have a right to get involved on their own. We're making sure that they have the list of agencies that can help them, that we're going to be sending that to them. We'll even send it on colored paper, just like the bill originally wrote. It's just that we aren't going to go the one extra step and take their information, their names, their telephone numbers, and then just pass them out to a bunch of foreclosure agencies that may attempt to get in touch with them, maybe not. But I simply believe that consumers should be held in a much more respectful position than that, that government doesn't have to dictate every term to them in their private transactions. And Senator, Mr. Chair, I will ask for a roll call vote on this amendment. I think this particular aspect of this very good bill is just taking a step too far, too fast.
Senator Limerick has requested a roll call vote. There will be a roll call. Is it three hands for a roll call? Seeing three hands, there will be a roll call vote. Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think we can probably bring this discussion to a close here with the amendment. But the truth of the matter is, Senator Limerick, government's already dealing with the aftermath of all of these foreclosures. Neighborhoods, communities, and our state are dealing with the issues confronting all of us as a society when people are losing their homes in record numbers. So there is consent, Senator Limerick, when it comes to dealing or working with that agency, with that foreclosure prevention counseling agency. The consumer can give their consent. The mortgagee can consent at that point. I wanted to comment, too, I think, about the equity stripping, because we do not want people working with those scam artists who are saying to people, we can help you save your home. Just sign it over to us. And then people are losing their home before they even have a chance to try to work their way out of it. So it does have to do with that. And members, I would just appreciate a red vote here.
Further discussion on the 812 amendment. Hearing no further discussion, Senator Limerick has moved the adoption of the 812 amendment. The secretary will take the roll. all members voting who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 44 ayes and 13 nays. Excuse me. Sorry, Senator Scheid. There being 13 ayes and 44 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 2912.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A14 amendment. I'd move the adoption of that.
Secretary will report the A14 amendment.
Senator Scheid moves to amend Senate File 2912 as follows, page 4, line 20. This is amendment A14.
Senator Scheid has moved the adoption of the A14 amendment. Senator Scheid on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What this does is on page 4, it inserts, it makes some grammatical, terminology correct. We're saying now, it says foreclosure prevention agency. We want to say foreclosure prevention counseling agency. And on line 26, same page 4, we want to say authorized foreclosure prevention counseling agency. We want to be consistent here, and council detected that we hadn't been, and that's, I'd appreciate your support.
Discussion on the A14 amendment. Hearing no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of Senator Scheid's motion to adopt the A14 amendment indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment's adopted. Further discussion on the Senate File 2912. Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I want to repeat again for members who the working group that what the membership of those working groups was. It was lenders. It was the Bankers Association of Minnesota and the Independent Community Bankers. It was realtors. It was housing advocates, legal aid, attorneys from the Bar Association, and attorneys who work in foreclosure. We had broad representation, and I believe I can say that we reached consensus on this bill. I told you that lenders generally don't like, in principle, that we're fixing an interest rate at the time of the sheriff's sale, but they've not been arguing against this bill because of that. I think they understand that that would be the least of their losses. So I appreciate members' patience and your support here.
Chair recognizes Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Scheid, was there any discussion at the time of these meetings that, especially on that consumer information that would be passed that we had just spent a few minutes talking about, that perhaps in the original mortgage deed, one could write into the mortgage deed that in the event of a possible foreclosure sale or a sheriff sale, that the mortgagee was giving permission to share their name and address with a foreclosure prevention counseling agency. Was there any discussion of maybe just putting it into the boilerplate language of what we do in Minnesota rather than do this after the fact thing that we now have represented in your bill?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, that's interesting. I think that maybe certain lenders do that already. That may be part of the mortgage note. I'm not sure. I know there's language in there in the event of foreclosure. So it may very well be that they're already doing that. I know that they're already contacting, trying to reach homeowners and trying to get them to respond to counseling. So thanks.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chairman, I regret that I'm not going to be joining you in the passage of this bill. I believe that consumer consent should be recognized in our state, and that by not having a formal consent item such as this and passing their name and address on a list of people that are now losing their homes, I think that's a little too critical of information to just pass on. If it was part of the original mortgage deed, I would certainly understand that because the consumer is agreeing to that. Senator Scheid, you said that some Some may be having that part of their mortgage deed. Others may not. I guess what you're telling me is that the industry is already beginning to recognize the problem, and they're trying to get ahead of it. And maybe that's, I would tend to think that that is a good thing. Having government now share information without the protection or the, maybe not protection is the right word, but without the permissive use of the consumer, I'm a little concerned when it comes to information of their name, address, phone numbers on a list of people who are facing a sheriff sale or foreclosure just going without their permission. I get a little nervous about that, and I think in this case this is a half a step too far in trying to solve this problem.
The chair recognizes Senator Higgins.
Mr. President, Senator Limmer, these folks have their name published in the newspaper 6 times before the sheriff's sale. They have it in the county that you and I live in. They have it on the county's website. If you live in St. Paul or Ramsey County area, it's in the St. Paul Legal Ledger 6 times before the sheriff's sale. It isn't like you're all of a sudden saying that somebody is going to have their name out there. Their name's out there.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Higgins, on every mortgage deed, there is a clause that is made reference on foreclosure. In that deed that the consumer signs in agreement, it says that in the event there is no payment, their names and numbers may be published according to the statutes of the state that they're in regarding the failure to pay. They sign an agreement saying that they will agree to that. There is no problem that I have with that. We are now taking one step beyond that and now going to share that information of the consumer, of their name, of their address, of their telephone number to an agency. Now, currently, you would need their permission to do so. This bill is now taking it one step further without any consumer's permission. That's the difference. That's the only difference.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 2912? Hearing no further discussion, Senator Scheid has moved that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2912 as amended be recommended to pass. As many as are of the opinion that that motion should prevail, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion prevails and the bill is recommended for passage.
Mr.
Senator Pogamiller.
President, I believe we want to take up Senator Higgins's bill. Which one is most closely related to the previous bill? We only have time for one more bill today. I would yield to Senator Higgins for 2910. Senate File 2910. And members, we're going to try to get out of here in the next 10 minutes or so that we can allow committees to meet.
The committee has before it now number 9 on general orders, Senate File 2910. The chair recognizes Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. You are chair at this point. That's right. Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2910 be recommended for passage.
Senator Higgins on that motion.
Thank you very much. Senate File 2910 came from the rental working group, and this was a consensus item from that group. It provides for those tenants who are caught when their landlord is going through foreclosure, and at the end of the redemption period, tenants usually get a notice of eviction, an unlawful detainer, that they must move out of that house. Often, the tenant hasn't done anything to deserve an unlawful detainer on their record. And we have talked in this body for a number of years about the effects of an unlawful detainer on a renter who's trying to move to a different property. It is often one of the strikes against them when they're competing with others for a good place to live. So what this would do is provide for mandatory expungement of that unlawful detainer in two situations. When the tenant vacated the foreclosed property before the expiration of the redemption period, or if the tenant never received the required notice to vacate. And so I will stand for questions. That's a very simple bill, and I ask for your support.
Is there discussion on Senate File 2910? Hearing no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. Senator Higgins moves that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2910 be recommended to pass. As many as are of the opinion that that motion should prevail, indicate by saying aye. Opposed? The motion prevails and the bill is recommended.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Pogemiller.
2918, Senate File 2918.
The committee has before it number 13 on general orders, Senate File 2918. The chair recognizes Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2918 be recommended to pass.
Senator Higgins on that motion.
Mr. Chair, this is another consensus item from the Renters Working Group. There is a provision in state law for properties to go through a 5-week redemption period rather than a 6-month redemption period. And it can be used in limited circumstances. It cannot be used for agricultural land. It cannot be used for a property more than, I think it's 10 acres in size. But it can be used for properties that are abandoned. And so what this bill would do is add to the, let me go back. Attorneys who work in this field told us that the 5-week redemption period is not used very often because it can be very difficult. So this bill adds the sentence that says a defendant's failure to appear at the hearing after service of process is conclusive evidence of abandonment by the defendant. Mr. Chair and members, I talked to a constituent the other night. He has 9 boarded and vacant properties on the 2 faces of his block. And some of them sit there, most of them sit there for at least 6 months as the owner is going through the redemption period. And almost none of them in his particular circumstance the owners haven't tried to redeem the properties. Then what happens is that the lender who becomes the owner kind of fiddles around, and they may or may not even know they own it for quite some time until all the paperwork catches up. And it's a huge strike against some neighborhoods and some blocks. As a house sits boarded and vacant, or vacant and not boarded even, often people will break into the property and steal anything that isn't, well, I can't even say that. They even steal things that are hooked in, such as copper pipe. People steal the architectural details out of a house. If you have a fireplace mantle that's pretty, if you have a built-in buffet, people will steal all those kinds of things because there seems to be nobody in charge of that property. People who want to do some illegal activity or another, this is a golden opportunity for them to get out of the weather and conduct whatever entrepreneurship business they think they're in. It also is a problem for upkeep. Nobody mows, nobody shovels, and nobody is taking care of the property, unless maybe a neighbor does. So this provision, Senate File 2918, would just make it easier for people to use that five-week redemption period. And just so you know, it is a judicial process that happens after the sheriff's sale, sometime during the traditional six-week redemption period. I'll stand for questions.
Is there discussion on Senate File 2918? Chair recognizes Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Higgins, now if I understand this correctly, in your bill, does this shrink the period of time that we're dealing with the notice?
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, there already is a five-week redemption period that is allowed. It is not used very often because practitioners say it's difficult to use. This adding this one sentence would make it a little easier for the practitioners to use that and get that house into the hands of somebody who will love it and take care of it.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Higgins, in the event, to make this work, the service of the process, the notice, is vitally important that it's done correctly then if we're shrinking that time frame down. The question I have is, in the event that you can't find the individual, now we have an expedited process period. Let's say the person left the state, or let's say the person is a viable person, they're down on their luck and we can't find them anywhere, but this might expedite their loss of their home. Tell me a little bit about what happens if you don't find an individual. Does this expedited process then kind of go away? Do we have a longer process to exhaust that possibility of finding them? Tell me how that would work if we don't find the individual.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, this is for properties that are considered abandoned to start with, where the owner has walked away from them, where he can't be found, and in circumstances like you said. Sometimes if the lender or the attorney for the lender cannot find the owner, they won't go through the five-week redemption period. They will stay with the six months redemption period. And they make a judgment call on whether they can verify whether it is truly abandoned. And in my other job in local government, I periodically will get telephone calls from somebody saying, what do you know about this property? And I can say, well, it's got boards on the windows, so it's really unlikely that somebody's living there. Or I can look and see that there has been no water used for some number of months. And they go through a procedure to try to figure out whether the property is actually abandoned. How they actually try to find the owner, you'd have to talk to somebody in the lender business. I don't know, but that's their judgment on whether to stay with the six-month redemption period or use the five. This would just give them one more tool to be able to use the five-week redemption period if they consider it appropriate.
Senator Limmer.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, when you make reference to an abandoned property, are you also making reference to a legal definition? Is there an abandoned property definition in state law? Or do we rely on every city to define what abandoned property is? The only reason I'm raising this question is I would hate to pass a bill that we're expediting the process, and then let's just say it's an honest mistake. We just can't get a hold of the person. Maybe they're taking care of a relative that's ill somewhere else. Maybe they're just not available for whatever reason. Would that classify that property as abandoned or not? We don't know the vagaries of what some people may be experiencing. And my experience has been with people that have lost their homes is that they have a lot of other problems as well as just a mortgage payment that fails. They have credit cards. Sometimes they have an undue amount of tension in their lives. that's manifested in different ways, sometimes violence in the home, sometimes walking away from every responsibility they have is also reflective in some of their experiences. Sometimes it's a piling on of other responsibilities, and it just kind of collapses in their life, some things, some of their obligations. Sometimes taking care of an ill relative might be a contributing factor to that. And I'm just hoping that we don't trigger something of shifting quickly into this type of direction if it was just an honest mistake.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I agree. We don't want to have an honest mistake or, a situation like a snowbird. You go to Arizona, but you don't board up your house. You don't turn off all the utilities. You don't use any, you don't turn off the furnace when you're in those certain circumstances. You probably arrange for somebody to mow the lawn. Those are the kinds of things that determine whether a house is abandoned or whether somebody's just left for a while. We're talking here about houses that are abandoned. Members, I ask for your support.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 2918? Hearing no further discussion, Senator Higgins has moved that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2918 be recommended to pass. As many are of the opinion that should prevail, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the bill is recommended.
Mr. Senator Chairman, I move that the committee do now rise and report.
Senator Pogemiller has moved that the committee do arise and report. You've heard the motion. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The Senate is back in session. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the Committee of the Whole as kept by the Secretary be now adopted.
Members, you've heard Senator Pogemiller's motion. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, I'd stand for announcements. We're going to recess to the call of the chair simply to receive the Finance Committee report later today, so we only would need a skeleton crew, and that's apparently going to be sometime after 2:30, Senator Senjum. So all we need is a skeleton at that point. But otherwise, we're done for the day and intend on meeting tomorrow at 11 a.m.
Announcements of Senate interest. Senator Senjum, hold that just a and we're reverting to motions and resolutions. Members will revert to motions for another motion. Senator Sparks.
Mr. President, I move that Senate File Number 2830 be withdrawn from the Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection and be referred to the Committee on Business, Industry, and Jobs. I have spoken with both chairs, and they seem to be in agreement with that, Mr. President.
Members, you heard Senator Sparks' motion. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Now we're on announcements of Senate interest. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, would the Majority Leader yield? Majority Leader, given we're going to be waiting for the Finance Committee report, I can only assume that might be the bonding bill. And would it be the plan then that we perhaps hear that tomorrow?
Okay. Senator Pogemiller.
And I think the plan would be to hear it on general orders, not as a special order.
Okay.
Senator Senjum.
Again, Majority Leader yield.
Yield.
On that, would you plan to caucus? I assume we're meeting at 11. And I'm just trying to wonder whether or not we ought to caucus in the morning on it or whether we'd come here and break for a caucus.
Senator Pogemiller.
We were going to caucus this evening at 5. What's your preference?
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, if that is the case, then Republican Senate will caucus tomorrow morning at 7:45 in the usual place. 7:45 tomorrow morning.
Senator Betzold.
Mr. President, the State Government Budget Division will meet in 20 minutes at 12:50. 20 minutes at 12:50.
Any more announcements of Senate interest? Senator Marty.
Mr. President, the Senate Health, Housing, and Family Security Committee will begin 10 minutes after we adjourn.
Senator Pogemiller.
Then members, again, we'll meet tomorrow at 11 a.m., but for purposes now of getting that committee report on the bonding bill, I would move the recess to the call of the chair.
Senator Pogemiller has moved to recess with the call of the chair. All those in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye. Opposed? The Senate is in recess.